back-to-back nights for the Toronto Maple Leafs on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show, the Leaf Edition. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, Jen Rolnick. For the next 2 hours, we are live on Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus from 4 to 6. Download us when you can't catch us live on your favorite pod. And remember to text us at 590-590 if you got something really interesting to tell Sammy, who can tell us.
And then we'll tell you where to go.
Yes.
Yeah.
We will. All right, halfway there on the back-to-back, as I just mentioned, the Leafs drop a 4-3 decision to the Philadelphia Flyers. It was so good for so long against those Flyers. Mm-hmm. All good things must come to an end, JB. And it looked like the Leafs may have had, if they may have had another 2 or 3 minutes,
they
were tying this game up.
Yeah,
but that doesn't take away the fact that it's pretty ugly for those first 40 minutes.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was a really weird game for me. And I don't know how you felt about it, but I, you know, I have a tough time analyzing that game last night because statistically, they were good. They, you know, high danger chances, 14-5 for the Leafs. They hit 6 posts, you know, all these things you think were good. But you couldn't help but watch that game and go, pretty ugly. I don't know. What was your overall takeaway?
Yeah, I did not like it at all.
You didn't?
No, and I don't care what the stats.
I got to tell you, I am downright stunned by that.
Yeah. You're going to love that one.
I don't care what the stats said. I don't care what the analytics said. That's not a team that looks like they're moving forward to getting ready for a first-round match.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they just think that they're going to snap their fingers and get it all going by mid-April. But I'd have some concerns. And the one thing that I liked the most, and we'll get into it with Sheldon Keefe momentarily, is that he didn't brush it off as just a game where he could find some positives. He found no positives, and I'm glad he didn't, because neither did I.
Yeah, and we're all dumber for having watched that. No, honestly, like that's, it was like one of those things, like that game from start to finish really provided no answers. And when you're moving towards the playoffs, what you're looking for is it coming together? You know, like, do you, you know, what about this is going to translate to playoffs? You know, now they're on their 1 month sort of ascension towards game one. And I wrote an article today, and we'll get more into it on the show, but my article is just about what are the lines? Like, going into game one, is there any one line that you like or D pair that you like? Have they established anything for this team in playoffs?
Outside, to answer your question, over the course of Sheldon's coaching tenure with the Leafs, all I can remember is Mitch and Austin.
Mitch and Austin. That's exactly, you know, what's in my article, is that there's one forward pair that is going to be together game one, assuming Mitch is healthy. And then after that, I literally cannot give you a second pair of forwards who are likely to play together. And so I won't do my article in oral form here, but the idea
let's
was...
Let's do a reading.
Yeah, you know, so just read the article. The idea was, if you go back and look at this Leafs team in the postseason over the past few years, against the Florida Panthers last year, the Florida Panthers used 4 forward lines total.
In five games.
They didn't
come on.
They never changed it up, not a fifth line.
What?
Played 2 shifts together.
Four
total. Total. The Toronto Maple Leafs used 22. 22 versions of a line. So this is not a one-off in that series. When they lost to Tampa prior to that, they used 24 lines. When they beat Tampa, I think it was like 19 or something like that.
Okay, not to derail your thoughts. We have Paul Maurice coming up at the top of the hour. Remind me to talk about your article today in sportsnet.ca about just running 4 lines in 5 games. I think it's like... I'm shocked to hear it.
When the Vegas Golden Knights beat Florida in the Cup Final, Vegas used 7 lines, but 4 of them played entirely.
Wow.
And the other 3 lines all played 1 minute together.
Okay.
So they used 4 lines.
And the Leafs?
Well, the Leafs did not make it that far, but in their other series, they were all around 20.
20.
20 to 25.
All around, average 20.
Last few years, yeah.
20.
So, you know, it's...
That's
the bingo bango balls.
And so, you know, I'm sitting here watching that game last night. I'm like, what line? I know Reeves is out and Marner's not there and Yarncroc's not there, but there was no moment when I knew who was on whose line.
Yeah. Okay. You know, you usually can know who to, like, you know, when somebody comes out, you look for who's coming next with them. And
it's
like,
it's Domi. That means here comes, could have been anyone.
I don't know.
And we, if we were to put a finger on this, mm-hmm. and this runs to kind of the consistency that you've talked about Sheldon over the years on our show anyways,
yep.
that if he's chasing the score, he'll make different decisions. Being down a couple of goals will not lean towards him just sticking with whatever he's got going. It's like, I'm changing it up or I'm going yep. back to what I thought worked
yep.
in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that game last night, you know, there was like, I think the D pairs stayed together, which I don't know if that was a great thing because Riley and Brody were struggle fest 98. It was not pretty back there either.
Can we do a GoFundMe? And so they'll never
play them together.
What
do we have to
What's a GoFundMe have to do with that?
Well, we're gonna have so much money that we're gonna just either give it to Sheldon or
the players themselves.
The players themselves. We gotta buy them apart. That's my point.
Yeah.
Find a way.
I guess it's that they were really good for a really long time. And
over.
Keefe is just searching for something with a decor that we've all had conversations about that may not be the best one in the league. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
And he's going back to something that he thinks should work. And boy, okay. It just doesn't.
Just give me something right now in pairs going into Washington tonight. And by the way, in about 15 minutes or so, we're going to have Alan May join us, who covers the Washington Capitals for NBC Washington. He'll help us tee up tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, JB, give me pairs tonight
okay.
that don't include Riley and Brody together.
Okay. So give me Riley and Labushkin. Give me Benoit and McCabe on his offside, Edmondson and Liljegren. I think Benoit was really good, you know, not really good, but he was one of the guys last night that I thought skated and looked pretty decent. It to me, that Benoit McCabe pairing hasn't been what they wanted it to be necessarily, but I...
Okay, hold on for a second. You're taking Brody out.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Which I suggested a while ago, but...
I got him right out of the lineup tonight.
I know, but he's not coming out. I cannot see Sheldon now bailing on Brody if he has not bailed on him already.
When's it too? Is it too late? Is it too close to playoffs to start messing with his confidence?
Yes.
Could he play worse?
I don't know, but he cannot. He cannot play the right side.
You can't tell me that Benoit is not more effective as a defender for the Leafs right now. Am I out on
no.
over my skis here?
And I thought Benoit was a, you know, and we could listen to Keefe talk about how he hated everyone last night, but I thought Benoit was a lone or one of the only bright spots for me, where it's like, oh yeah, like missed having that guy in the lineup. So
skated a puck up the ice a couple yeah. times, yeah, had a
one,
shot.
There was yeah. one I was
just a little too aggressive.
Pumped the brakes.
I think he was too excited just getting back in.
It's not like Brody's in his late 30s here. Is it just lack of confidence? Is it focus with him?
It's speed to me. And when your speed goes and you're someone who plays tactically and defends the blue line, whatever, what is he? He's not physical. He's not offensive. It's, you know, I want to be wrong here. The Leafs need a good Brody for their PK to
yeah.
stabilize a pair. He makes $5 million. Like, they need him to be good. But when he's not, I can't pretend he has been.
And I guess to your point, if there was ever a night they were going to do it, second half of back-to-back where he comes off struggling, you can be like, oh, he's a little bit banged up. You don't have to show him up and, you know, say that he's a healthy, say he's a bit banged up, bring him out of the lineup. Give them a rest until they play Saturday night. Another back-to-back. I don't know. I could see it happening, I guess, but probably not.
Yeah, it is unlikely. I admit that.
I'm okay with even Edmondson and Brody. Just something different.
Edmondson and Brody
yes.
together.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I can. Yeah. Yeah. Let's have a look at that.
Edmondson's fine on the on his off wing.
You'd play Edmondson on the right side.
Yes, and I put Brody on the left side.
Would you really? This is the full shelter treatment. Here's a yes. big defensive D-man for you for yes. once, instead of you being that for someone else.
Yes.
Okay. And then
there's this saying as about shuffling some sort of chairs on a sinking ship, but I don't know exactly how the saying goes.
That would be the Titanic.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
But
that
we're
sink?
Looking for something. I just want something where you go, they had a good night. Let's see if we got something here.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Sheldon Keefe for our first Kippers Clipper on the overview of the game last night.
Just weren't sharp. We weren't sharp mentally. Couldn't pass the puck, couldn't handle the puck, didn't defend, didn't compete. So not a lot to like.
Oh, boy.
Thank you. Thank you for not finding one positive. And I mean that.
Yeah. I'm usually the guy who looks for them. And other than maybe Benoit, I am struggling yeah. to give you one.
So if they...
Tavares. I like Tavares, okay.
If they hit... So how many plus they hit last night? 7, including the one that went in? If 3 of those go in off the post instead of out, is he singing the same tune?
If my aunt had... So. Sammy?
They hit 6
I
posts.
I don't care.
Skipper. They hit 6
I
posts.
I don't care.
You don't care at all?
6 non-shots on goal, okay? That's what you had last night.
Yeah.
You didn't even get credited for a shot on goal. I don't care about 6 posts.
Should change that.
Don't even bring that in the equation.
Okay.
Stick to Sheldon's comments. Okay. We sucked, and we are less than a month away from the Stanley Cup playoffs. We better get our act together.
Fair. Totally
let's,
fair.
Let's hear Sheldon on the post. See if he agrees with Kipper. Clip 3, please.
Yeah, we had a ton of chances, second period, third period, but it could have been a lot worse in the first period at the same time. So you can't play catch-up hockey on the road and expect to win. So, we weren't ready to go. That's on me to start the game in the first period and dig yourselves a hole. It's amazing when you do that how all of a sudden the luck doesn't go your way.
Okay, I'm loving Sheldon this today. Loving him. Loving him. Yeah, this, real.
Shocker.
It's real.
The time he's the most sour, you love him the most.
His comments are real.
I know. Yeah. He's right. But I'm just playing devil's advocate with the 6 posts here. But like, yeah, I'm glad he's like this because.
Even the part where he says it's on me. Thank you. It's your team. It's your head. You're the head coach. It's a horrible start. Horrible. John Tavares, a goal and 2 assists. I don't care. You were soft as a pillow on the first shift. You brought the puck into the middle. You lost it. 19 seconds later, it's in the net. Horrible start.
Well, if you're, he was critical of himself, Keith was. Why are we starting John Tavares on the road with, who is he with?
Robertson.
Nyes and Robertson and Liljegren on the back. Like, why is that our first option?
I'm actually okay with that. I'm okay with that because we got to put these guys in a position where they feel important. Starting a hockey game in the NHL is a big deal, okay? I've had maybe 4 my whole career.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm telling you. You don't start 3rd and 4th line. You start number 1 line. You start Messier's. You start Matthews.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You start McDavid.
Yeah.
You know why? Because you don't want to get buried the first minute and set a tone that carries mentally. It's like one bad shift in the second period doesn't have the same mental effect on you as a bad first shift because you carry all your prep work. And to Sheldon's point, you flush your prep down the toilet with a bad first shift. That's why you always see the Stars start because the coaches are scared to death on having a bad shift that can now have a domino effect on you. And I'm okay with Robertson. Put him in there. You got to find out. You got to make him feel important. But it's up to you, Nick, and JT. And I don't know who the left winger was with it.
Nyes.
Come on, guys. Can't get soft here. You're playing a team.
Won the draw, too.
That just, exactly. You win the draw, and you still... you're shoveling a puck out of your net 19 seconds later.
Yeah, thanks, Ilya, by the way.
But that first shift, all the boys should have said is, Get it in deep.
Yeah.
Get it in deep, boys. Do not mess around here. They've lost, what, 8 in a row? Their coach just benched their captain. He's full of piss and vinegar. They're going to come out here. We got to be ready. And they weren't. It was a terrible first shift.
Yeah, you know, I don't know where you stand on this, but, like, I made this joke doing Leafs Talk with Sam last night, which was just, like, the one thing I have some issue with is people are like, you can't give up a goal in the first period. You can't, you know, it's crucial. And then you can't give up a goal in the final minute of the first period. You can't give one up in the final minute. Yeah, you can't give up a goal in the first shift after a power play. You just can't do it. You can't, and all of a sudden, you know, there's no game left. It's like, you never want to give up.
Yeah.
You always want to have good shifts.
I know, but it's what you carry. It's those last thoughts carrying it into a dressing room, and it's
for sure the final minute ones just are killers.
That momentum,
yeah,
that you have to sit and fester for 15 minutes.
Yeah,
it's that last shift that you're thinking about.
Yeah, you know, it's, right? But we just talk a lot to me about the Leafs not being prepared for you know, the starts of periods. And is it worse for the Leafs than other teams? I don't know.
Saturday night,
end of periods, and end of games like have to be worse. It has
the beginning. How many times have they given up goals early to start periods?
You know, I'm sure there's statistical analysis that can be done on this.
Saturday night, they had the lead. And within 20 seconds of the third period against Carolina, Connor Duart's shoveling a puck off the goal line, or else it's 3-3 in the opening minute.
Yeah, you know, it definitely seems like it happens. I don't know if it's true, but you're right. You're right
What are you guys doing? What are you talking about in between periods? And, like, what's happening here?
Mm-hmm.
That you're having these mental lapses to start or finish periods or games.
Well, we have Keith on not matching the Flyers' intensity. Clip 2, let's follow up with that.
I don't think it has anything to do with urgency necessarily. We clearly weren't sharp, especially on our half of the ice, so... And we weren't willing to do the things necessary tonight from the start of the game. I thought we competed pretty good on the offensive side, but you got to do a better job in your own zone with and without the puck, and we were very poor in that area tonight.
It's actually shocking that Nick Robertson got back on the ice after the first 5 minutes or whatever, where he's the weak side winger, and his guy just walks down Main Street behind him. It's like, God, man. You know, your healthy scratch, all you must be thinking about is defensive coverage. How do you not? It's the one thing you do in the D zone.
I totally agree, but I'm okay with the Leafs where they are, and I'm sure we'll lead to a discussion on the standings. Mm-hmm. But where they are right now, with there's no panic in losing a playoff spot here. So why not put these guys in a position to be tested now? Because eventually, if you think you're going to win two rounds or three rounds to get to a conference final or a Stanley Cup final, you got to put these guys in tests now.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of them failed last night.
Yeah, no doubt.
But keep throwing them out there, even if it means that Austin or Nylander don't get to pad their stats. I'm okay with that. Learn something about the rest of your lineup. And he learned something last night. Give him another chance. Put them back in the fire again and remind them, you failed last night, but you're going to get another chance here and you got to pass.
But I do wonder, when do we go from this is the educational portion of the season and we're learning what these guys can do in these situations to, okay, you know, that part's over. Now we're playing the best guys in the best situation. Yeah. We're playoff ready.
This is the National Hockey
League. You have no choice. You have no choice but to keep throwing them out there because it will not... Your lineup isn't deep enough.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you sit there and go, okay, I got six guys going and I got six... You can't just go with six guys. You got to keep throwing them out there. The lessons never stop.
Mm-hmm.
But you hope that if there's enough repetition in the teaching moments... that they get to relax a little bit more. They get to learn a little bit something about themselves. And that's what I think the next dozen games should be all about. Keep throwing Holmberg and McMahon and Robertson out there. Even if they look bad, you have no choice, man. You got to build these guys up.
Yeah.
You got to have them feeling somewhat in a responsible mode.
Yeah.
To get ready for game one.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. In researching for this article today, I was looking at some of the recent Cup champions and what their lines look like, you know, a little bit farther down the lineup. it's not like they're perfect. Like, Matt Amadio is on the third line for Vegas last year, who was a waiver release of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, you know, if you're with guys that can support you, some of these guys can play. Like, you can cover up, you know, Robertson or Holmberg or whoever if they're on a decently supported line.
Yes, you're right. And I think the best example so far who's come a long way is Bobby McMahon.
Right.
Right. He is the
Abe
perfect
Kubel
example.
One with Colorado.
You had him for half a season at 10 minutes, and now in the last week and a half, we've seen him go from 15 to 17 minutes, probably a little under 17 last night for him. But he's now become an important guy because he is now being thrown out there more, and I think he's a lot calmer. He doesn't have to feel like he's got to make a great play to get his next shift. He knows it's coming. Just need about two or three more of those guys. Yeah. Holmberg.
That was Benoit to me last night, where he doesn't know his next shift's coming, so it just seemed like a little much, a little too aggressive, a little too excitable.
Holmberg, Robertson, you know, even Matthew Nyes. There's some shifts where he looks pretty darn good, and there's other ones where he's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So yeah, get him off the ice.
In another dip for
but
me.
They're not going anywhere without those guys.
No, they are going to need them. You know, I thought a good example of that last night is Liljegren, as involved as he was, goalie pulled. He got a lot of touches in the offensive zone in big situations. Now, I don't love that necessarily, you know, that he's in those spots, but I appreciate that it should help with his confidence and give him reps he needs. And so they clearly see this as a guy that they want to be involved. And I don't know. This is they're doing what you're talking about, Kip, giving him the opportunity
Yeah.
You mentioned the schedule there, like, and them being locked into a spot. I was listening to Bunkus this morning talking about this, and it was something that I hadn't really thought of, but they've been in this malaise to the end of season since 2017, 2018, basically.
Where it's just the March malaise.
It's just a, you know, death march to playing either the Bruins or the Lightning or the Panthers for the last bit of the season. You can't really move up. You can't really move down. And how much of that has led to what's happened in the playoffs with them not playing any intensity down the stretch? Like, you think about these teams, like, I mean, it's a very easy example to draw, but look at Florida last year, where they are playing fighter, scrapping, life or death, and they go down 3-1 to Boston, but they've been playing playoff hockey for however many weeks, and they come back, they win, they go all the way to the final or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, these malaise games, it just feels like it's happened to them every single year. And a lot of that's because if they've lost to bad teams and all that. But, like, they're never playing intense games down the stretch. They're meaningless.
Yeah.
Well, listen, then.
Like, that has to have an effect.
Lose to Edmonton, Carolina, New Jersey, Washington, and then start Florida feeling like.
Yeah, but
you got to play to save your season.
Mode, yeah, they might get there organically.
But they're just not, like, listen, they're not going to do that. They have too much skill.
They're 85 points. If they get 10 points, they're in playoffs in the next 14 games.
They've been winning a lot. Like,
they win five times.
But this
just,
is
four or five.
That's what's wrong with the almost war friggin' standings.
This is where Sheldon has to find a way to overcome that, Sammy. That's your head coach who sets the table. Practice, games, dinners, meetings, sense of we're going nowhere, guys. You want to play like that? It's over. It is Daryl Sutter, 8 days, guys. Okay? If you think you're going to come to the rink and just outscore your mistakes in the first two periods and think you still got a chance by playing this river hockey and last one to touch the puck wins, you're done.
I get all that. And he is going to be hammering them with that for the next 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. But it's human nature. I'm not sure
if he's going to hammer them or not. You know how
Well, he's going to be telling them, like, process. He's going to be having all his meetings that he loves to have. They're going to be telling him all the different things. He's going to be coaching just as hard. But it's human nature for these guys. They're like, this doesn't matter.
We'll know by watching. We'll know by watching.
If he's tricked them into caring?
Yes.
But how can you, it's the same guy thing, the same things for five straight seasons in the exact same situation you've been in. Mm-hmm. I don't get, I know they're professional, they're making so much money. They should be trying their hardest every night, and I believe they do. But in the back of their mind, it's like, well, another one that doesn't matter.
Not life or death, yeah.
Because we can't move up, we can't move down because of all these great rivals that have been created by Gary's sweet playoff format.
Yes. One thing I did want to touch on was Joseph Woll not being available.
Yeah.
Or last night he didn't back up. I talked to, we were all trying to figure out what happened, where he was. But talking to my buddy Michael Amato, who works here at Sportsnet, and basically he was just suggesting what is pretty obvious. They have three goaltenders. If you want Woll to start in the second half of the back-to-back, you might as well have Jones on the bench in case you pull the goalie. Woll's still available as your starter for the next night. Carolina does this with three, so
yeah.
He's going to go tonight. No, I don't think there's any great conspiracy about where Woll's been or
no injury. And I almost have to revert to our conversation a couple of days ago where they're gonna give Woll plenty of opportunities here to get his game ready by game one.
What's it been, four straight for Samsonov?
So
yeah,
I think four straight. But I think that they wanted to use that window too to listen. Joseph Woll was off 2+ months.
Yeah. So this is like a get back in a couple games. Let's like slow her down.
Put
practice.
The work in. Yep. And then put the work in. So we assume he's playing tonight.
Yeah.
And if he has a good outing, I could see him getting Saturday as well.
Really?
So, but.
Was that based off Samsonov last night? Did you like Samsonov?
Not really, but he's the least of my worries right now for the Leafs. The goaltending, we're going to question right to the very end.
Yeah.
But as of now, I think there's a lot of focus that needs to go to certain individuals or lines or D combos. Right now, I think they're going to give Samsonov and Woll ample opportunities the last, 15 games?
Yeah. Let's listen to the coach on Samsonov and we'll jump back in.
I think he was like the group that I didn't like anybody tonight. Forward defense goaltending, didn't like anybody.
Okay, got it. No one good. I thought he
so mad. He talked for a minute 40.
A minute 40 total.
That's...
They weren't very good.
He was swimming a little bit.
Well, I thought that an open door or a closed door, that he made himself an open door. He got narrow at times and almost got out of the way of pucks.
Lyon's goal was no good.
No. I thought Maisie, was that the one where there was some contact it looked like, but he kind of played it up and twisted
a bit?
Yeah, but
even Benoit giving up the middle on the 360 move. And then McCabe, over back checks.
Same with Robertson.
Right?
Well, yeah.
It was a complete gong show.
I actually put that whole thing on Max, who fires a absolute laser saucer straight towards the blue line from behind the net with no support. And it's didn't even need to saucer it.
Yeah.
He had
He's
no
high
chance.
Risk with his passing.
He had no chance to make a play on that. It goes down the other way. Benoit's out of position. Then it's a, soup sandwich, like you say.
It just wasn't pretty. That's a great use of soup sandwich.
You.
Yeah. Shout out to Darren Underwood for that.
Willie Nylander has 27 points in the last 20 games. There's a few people.
And let me tell you, he's -3 over that time.
People are texting. The monster season continues. And I don't know. Am I watching the same thing here? Because we know how skilled he is. We know that.
He's so good.
He's actually the human embodiment of the Leafs, isn't he? He can do it almost better than anyone in the league.
But I think
game's risky.
Regressed since the first 40, 50 games.
Kip, I think he has 3 or 4 blue line turnovers for breakaways in the last 3 or 4 games. No person makes more plays and hands over more pucks in the same game, this guy. High event both ways. Electric to watch.
And it's not... doesn't look like it's changing anytime soon. He did limit this stuff.
He can do it.
Right?
He can do it.
The first 40 games.
Did he not do it? I think so,
After the All-Star break, it kind of...
It's almost like there was this one moment throughout the season where it all sort of changed. Let me think about
it. A contract?
Oh, when he got 92 schmillion? Maybe that was the moment it all changed.
There was more intent.
Just saying.
He played a heavier game in the first half. He did.
Yeah. Hey, no argument. I think this guy, I have no worries. You talk about guys you're not worried about, that the moment doesn't get too big for him. He's able to show up and be there and be the same guy. The problem is the same guy takes a lot of chances and doesn't always think defensively responsible, and he is unbelievably dynamic.
Last year, Kipper, we had the conversation, one of our big conversation all year, was how much more consistent Willie had been. That had been the biggest jump for him, where he cut out those weak stretches where he didn't notice them, and we talked about that all. And then right around this time last year, in the standings malaise that they were in again last year, this happened, and without the production. Like, you have the production now that's there, but the defensive side of the puck, like, even Mike Johnson last night on the broadcast did a great job bringing it up. He's above the puck, like, on multiple different occasions.
On the, yeah, offensively, he's above it. Like, instead of, like...
He's just not...
Where he shouldn't be.
He's just not locked in. Mm-hmm. And I think I have belief that he will be once it starts. It's just this whole team has nothing to play for,
Kipper. I worry more about
There's
Austin
nothing
and Mitch
to play
than
for.
I do Willie in playoffs.
Agree. Couldn't agree more. But couldn't agree more.
Remember, like, against Florida, game two, the Leafs were up 2-1 to start the second period, and he has a moment where he just starts dangling in the neutral zone. He falls, and Barkov goes in there and buries it. That's just Willie. He does it in the playoffs, too.
Yeah, I vaguely remember.
Yeah, I'm just saying, though, yeah. It's like... It's crept in the playoffs on occasion, too. I know he's got this feeling like he steps up and he's way better than Matthews and Marner in the playoffs, which I'm not really buying all that much.
I just think he's the same player he is. He doesn't change.
But if he gives up as many as he gets, what are we doing?
Agreed. It's a huge... This is the same, my feeling with Robertson. I got, you know, my buddies texting me, like, pitchers last night, they shared the points per 60 or whatever. Robertson's fourth on the team and whatever. It's like he gives up as many that way, unfortunately. You know, and Willie does not give up as many that way as he does offensively, but he can on certain nights, and last night I think he did.
All right. We've solved nothing.
Nope.
And we're just getting started. when we return, we got Alan May helping us tee up the Washington Capitals. Are they back in it or what?
That power play of theirs is humming. Here comes Ovi.
Here comes Ovi. Sammy. He's hot.
Let's go to break.
All right, Ovi. Alan May. When we return on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Toronto Maple Leafs set to play their second game in as many nights. They battled the Washington Capitals. Let's bring in Alan May, former National Hockey League player. More importantly, my right winger when I broke into the league.
Yes.
Now doing a terrific job covering the Washington Capitals for NBC Washington. Maisie, what's going on?
Nothing. You forgot to say that I think I assisted on your first goal as well, but we won't bring that up.
You did, and the late Doug Wickenheiser. There's my first goal.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wasn't it a good one, too?
Oh, it was fantastic. Joe Louis, Sammy St. Laurent didn't stand a chance. Poor guy. I think I ended his career that night.
First overall, and did you get drafted?
Undrafted.
Got two undrafted wingers that did pretty good for themselves.
There you go. All right, listen. Capitals need wins. They got to climb in there, but it's a race I didn't necessarily see maybe a month ago. But how has this been done in terms of the Washington Capitals now having a legitimate shot at making the playoffs?
Well, if you just look at the goal differential, when I say it's been pure defense, you'd laugh me out of the room, but it's been pure defense in the last 15 games. It's been 10-4-1 in that time. And you look at the goals for 54 goals for, 44 goals against. But of those goals against, 23 have come in the four losses and only 7 goals for in those four losses. The power play is finally clicking. I think it's 16 power play goals for, 7 power play goals against in that time. But it's been swarming defense. They've been playing better without the puck. I think they realize they're not the fastest team. They're certainly not the slowest team, but they're not the fastest. And they're realizing they're not the offensive juggernaut they used to be. They need a 5-man swarm. They got to stay above the puck. And it's very similar to what you saw out of the Philadelphia Flyers last night against the Leafs. They block out the middle of the ice. And Charlie Lindgren's job has been a lot easier. He only has to worry about the half of the net where the puck is on. and he just gets that glove out there. They're keeping shots to the perimeter. The high dangers are going down. In most of their wins, they're suffocating teams. The penalty kill's been really big for them. Most of the season, it's been pretty good. The power play was awful at the start of the year. It was either in 32nd, 31st, or 30th place. And I think that everyone finally got the attention of the coaching staff after a game at Edmonton just over a week ago where they just got the doors blown off them trying to trade goals at the Oilers. And after that, they settled down. Three really good games of excellent defense against Seattle, Vancouver, and against the Calgary Flames just the other night. But it's been team defense all the way.
Team defense has led to, some really good goaltending, too, from Charlie Lindgren. Over the month of March, he's got the best save percentage at .940. Is this a surprise, a revelation? You know, this guy, I think he's almost 30 years old. Where did this guy come from?
Well, unfortunately, he came from being behind excellent goaltending. When he was in St. Louis, they had Husso and Binnington and Montreal, Carey Price, and Jake Allen. So when you look at that, the opportunities aren't there. Like you have to go to the right place at the right time to get your opportunity. No pressure last year being a backup. Every time he went in, he was spectacular. The entire team fell apart down the stretch last year. And you know, everything about Laviolette's system caught up to the team. This year, right from the get-go, he's been battling hard, the glove hand, playing with a ton of confidence. And I think that's bred confidence from his teammates. But he's been there. He was just always in the wrong place at the right time, and now he's in the right place, and it certainly looks like the right time.
Alan, in 2018, when the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup, Kuznetsov could have easily won a Conn Smythe and looked like a guy that was just going to be a Washington Capital for a very long time. He ends out the door at the trade deadline. Who has benefited on this roster because of that? Who can we watch tonight that is now eating up some of those minutes?
Well, I think the biggest thing with getting Evgeny out of town, you know, unfortunately he had to go to rehab. He was gone for a while. He was away from the team for about 6 weeks. Then when he got back, they didn't let him back in, basically. They knew they had something worked out with Carolina. But it's benefited Connor McMichael. Has been given a more important role every single game. And he deserves the role. It wasn't just handed to him. He had to really work hard the last couple of years. He's developed an all-round game. His two-way play is way better. It used to be about, you know, those guys that score 50 and 60 in junior like yourself. You got to figure out what your role is. And he has figured out that his role needs to be a competent all-round center that stops on pucks, battles for pucks. And then they called up Hendrix LaPierre a while back, and he had a hat trick his last game in the American League against the Belleville Senators. And he came into the Caps, and he was flying. He was on a confidence high, and he was skating not just fast on offense, the back checking, the tenacity that he skated with. He doesn't have to worry about getting a jersey every game. And he's really stepped up, and he's really hidden some of the slower wingers or the wingers that aren't getting there as fast as they used to be. His two-way game has really developed. His puck protection, his puck management, way better. And I think you and I have talked about it before, how important it is to play in the American Hockey League. And if you could be on a good team and go to the finals, what that does for you. Learning about defensive play, the sacrifice, the block shots, take hits, make plays, everything that goes involved with winning. All these Capitals players that were on that roster to finish last year and win the Calder Cup with a team that really shouldn't have won the Calder Cup, they've all benefited and they've all came here ready to play. Beck Malenstein, Alexi Protas, they played very, very well. And because of that growth and getting that two extra months of hockey, those guys had a little bit of cheat code on everyone else. So they developed confidence in themselves and the organization knew that it was time to let these guys start getting in the lineup, and they haven't let management down. They haven't let the coaching staff and certainly not their teammates down with their evolved play. And the all-around play has been a lot better. It's been a lot better to watch because we all know when you first come out of junior, especially the high picks, they think they're still going to be that guy, the guy. And it takes a while. If you're not ready for NHL day one, it takes some hard work, usually about 3 years in the minors, in my opinion, to get yourself ready. And when you're here in the States, it's you're not under the gun, under the microscope so much to develop and have to produce in the American League. And what's wrong with this guy? You just kind of put them there. You kind of boil them, get them ready, and then you bring them up when they're perfectly baked. So there's so many good things about what these young players are doing right now.
So the young guys are making a big difference for them, but I got to believe if you look at the Caps power play percentage in the first half of the year up until December was 30th in the league, and since then they've been at 28%, fourth best in the league since. Got to believe that's on the back of the vets, that's on the back of Ovi, who now has 20 goals in 19 straight NHL seasons. What has changed for Ovechkin that he seems back?
He's alive!
He's back!
Well, I think the big thing is at the start of the year, their five guys that were on the power play were melting the ice because they weren't moving around. They were just standing in that 1-3-1. And I don't know what happened, who said what, if it was coaching staff, or was players finally having a blowout with each other, or maybe getting ready in like a cocktail napkins and figuring out what they could do. But they all started moving around. And most importantly, Ovi got out of the old office and he started to go on the right side of the point where John Carlson was. John Carlson was kind of staying up on the lefty. And teams didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, the players started to realize there were more openings when Ovi moved up there. And Ovi is an incredible passer. We know he's got a wicked shot. But he was doing the same thing for so long. It was basically 15 years of that setup. His career has been longer, but it's been 15 years of that setup. And they were standing around looking for perfect passes. They weren't even getting any quality looks. And once he finally started to move around, everyone else started to move around. I don't think it matters which five guys are out there or that four other guys with Ovi right now. If he moves around, it makes the penalty killers get out of position, forces them to think, opens up passing lanes, opens up shot lanes. And it's been a lot better to watch because we all know, as much as we love hockey, when we hate on a power play, it's just the worst 2 minutes of a game when they're just standing around being so deliberate and everyone in the building knows what's going to happen. And when you're not getting goals, it gets even tougher and tougher. And I felt that the last 3 years, the power play has been a drag on the team. Right now, it's such a positive.
We're talking to Alan May, former NHLer, covering the Washington Capitals for NBC Washington. So everybody talks about Toronto being the media market of the world and how much coverage everyone gets when they're here, with the exception of assistant coaches. We know nothing about the Leaf assistant coaches every year, and that included Spencer Carberry, who left here to become the Washington Capitals head coach. What can you tell people listening now who are Leaf fans about Spencer Carberry that they had no idea when he was behind the Leaf bench?
He loves to talk, and he's a great guy, huge personality, gracious to everyone, and he's done such a great job of you know, he communicates very well with his players. And, you know, I heard that when he was in South Carolina, heard that when he was in Hershey, that his communication skills were excellent. And he hasn't eaten his own. He hasn't beat up the team. He doesn't blame losses on players. He doesn't accept the credit for the wins. And he always talks about the group. And you know what, when there's a problem, he's probably in the office about 4 a.m. getting ready, trying to figure it out and try to help them get out of the problems. But he just looked at ways to fix problems and find solutions rather than finding and blaming people. But I think an incredible personality, a great hockey mind, and just the way he goes about selling what he believes in the game of hockey without acting like he's invented the game, because we know how nauseating that can be when general managers and coaches act like they invented the game, created it, and you know, they're the purveyors of everything excellent in the game. He's a humble dude. He's worked really hard with his coaching staff. He lets his coaching staff have a huge say. And I'll give you his number if you want to call him, because he's probably willing to talk to you now, Kip.
Kirk Muller there, he leans a lot on Kirk.
Well, the entire coaching staff, these guys, they hang out a ton. They collaborate. The skills coach is a part of it. The video coaches are part of it. But having Muller around, such a great positive influence all the time. He's been excellent, and he brings, you know, there's different points of his life. He's connected to everyone in the game. It's amazing, but he's able to lean on all of that experience, you know, from his playing experience to his different coaching experiences to the people he knows. It's always just a phone call or a text away. So certainly having Kirk Muller around has been an excellent choice. It's been a great hire. He's fit in very well with the guys. And once again, they're all good to the players. They don't bend over backwards to the players. They get them to change. They help them get better. And it's been great watching these guys all collaborate.
All right. Looking forward to the game tonight. Have a great call. Alan, great catching up with you. Thanks for doing this, pal.
Take care.
Thanks, okay. Alan.
Alan May, NBC Washington.
The Capitals goal leader since 2005-06 has been Ovechkin. This year, Dylan Strome. Shocked? Dylan Strome has 23 goals, yeah. Actually ahead of Ovi.
Smart player, high IQ, not a great skater.
No.
But
no, but he is smart. He's like, to me, he's like
they're
RNH
not a fast
light.
Team.
He's a Nuge light. Yeah.
The Leafs are going to have to really be patient here if, in fact, they catch themselves into this 2-1 kind of low-scoring game.
You're right. Yeah, that is something that we've preached for the Leafs is that patience. But they do have those sort of guys.
Don't cheat on this team.
No. You know what's a fun fact for me, too, is combined blocks and hits among forwards. So you total the blocks and hits, and look at the guys who rank tops of the league. It's Garnet Hathaway, Cal Clutterbuck, and then before Tom Wilson is this Beck Malenstein, this guy on Washington. So they got two guys in the top four that hit and block shots, and that's kind of the way they want to do it, right? They want to slow it down. And
I looked at the box score for the game where you got your first career goal. Alan May had a hell of a night that night. Gordie Howe hat trick.
Did he?
Goal assist in a fight?
Yeah, 11 Pims plus two. Nick Kiprios plus two.
Who did he fight?
Let me quickly pull that up.
Detroit?
Maybe Joey Kosher.
Ooh.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it would have been Joey Kosher.
Who'd win the fight, Alan May and Brad May?
Kevin Hatcher got in a fight that night. A lot of fights that night.
Do you have a roster of Detroit's?
I do.
Let me hear some names.
One of the best things in sports is let's remember a guy.
Do you know who scored two goals for the...
Stevie Y?
Nope. Sean Burr had two goals.
Oh, Sean
The
Burr.
Late Sean Burr.
He had two goals, but Stevie Eiserman had two assists. He was a dash one. Joey Kosher had two assists. He was a plus one. So, yeah, there you go.
Did Borja Sandling play that game?
He did.
Yeah, that's really cool for me.
Wow.
Really cool.
Oh, yeah. That is amazing, Kippy.
I was like 6-7 years old when Sitler, Salming, yeah. Lanny were my like heroes.
That's cool.
Man,
that
cool.
was like a moment.
There you go.
And you look across the ice and you see the king.
Yeah. Very cool.
And do you remember who played in net that night for the for you guys?
Jim Rivenak?
Bob Mason. Played in
okay.
So there you go.
Which great guy too.
That's awesome.
Great guy.
To play against yeah. Salming, that's pretty amazing, Kev.
Yeah.
Didn't try to run him?
Not even close. Autograph book time. Can I have your stick?
Jersey swap?
Jersey swap, anything.
Just don't ask the Raptors about jersey swaps.
Yeah, geez. In listening to Alan May talk about Spencer Carberry, so he's an University of Alaska Seawolves alumnus like myself. He was there the year before I was. So when I went on my fly up, usually you call it a fly down, he was one of the guys that kind of took me around and showed me the dorms and everything. He is a massive personality, and guys like, you know, he partied and guys loved him. I'm shocked watching his career ascension because you just kind of see one of your like, you know, meathead hockey buddies that everyone loves to hang out with. And it's really incredible how well he's done for himself and how teams seem to galvanize behind him because, again, he's a wildly popular character.
Do you remember that first game the Leafs played against the Caps? I think it was an afternoon game. It was a weird game. It was the first game we ever watched, all three of us together, where Kipper said I was talking too much.
Okay, yeah.
They were like the worst team in the world.
Yeah.
Like they were truly horrendous.
I watched them at training camp, yeah. And I'm like, it may be a tough year.
Yeah.
It may be a tough year.
That he's wrung this out of them is very impressive.
Let me throw this out to you because we often have this coach of the year conversation mm-hmm. with the Tockets of the world. And
yeah.
Like, would he not be in the running if they make the playoffs?
I don't see why not. To me, you know, the Jets coaching staff having them in first in a very tough central. Tockett with the Canucks is worth a mention. Knobloch, what he's done to the Oilers, but Spencer Carberry is in that conversation.
I'll bring it up in game time. We'll have the exact
Burnett
odds.
The Predators as well.
All right. And we're just getting started. As we said earlier in the show, Paul Maurice will join us.
Awesome.
I'm really looking forward to that. Plus, we'll get a little bit more into Tortorella.
Yeah, we ignored him, but we're going to talk about
mention
him.
His post-game
Slough
remarks
on
benching his captain. We're going to get into that as well. So plenty more on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Do not go away. That's an order.